legendary British-born Joe Cocker with his classic Feeling All Right. Originally, by the way, the title was a question, as in, you feeling all right? I'm not feeling too good myself. That was the original title of this song, but he made it an emphatic statement, not just a question. It's the opening track on his 1969 album, With a Little Help from My Friends. Joe Cocker died of complications of lung cancer on December the 22nd, 2014. He was 70 years old. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's going to be a bumpy ride this year, it seems. But I should start out by wishing us all a very, very purposeful and productive new year. Of course, being a brand new year, we always have these high hopes, and we look forward to the new year, usually with an abundance of hope and joy. But we kind of know intuitively that many of the troubles that we experienced as a nation and even individually will be with us in the new year. Just the same, we shouldn't despair. We shouldn't yield to the utter desperation that people want us to feel for the new year. Let us instead move into the new year committed individually and collectively to creating transformative change in ourselves, in our communities, with our loved ones, and with an eye toward surmounting the obstacles in our way, that we have what it takes to get over quite a few of them, but that we also have to make a difference in the way we operate every day. We have to change because the times demand it. And besides which, the situation notwithstanding, our domestic and foreign situation notwithstanding, we should be changing anyway. We cannot be static. We have to be dynamic people. And it is what is going to save us, really. The ability to assess the situation and adapt to change. Not this kind of Donald Trump type change, but I mean changing in the sense that we see ourselves differently. We're not the people, and we shouldn't be the people simply to, you know, at whom things are targeted. You know, that we are constantly the victims of things. We have the power and the ability and the capacity to move differently in the world, in our world, because we will be talking this year about the connection between this kind of change, this kind of transformative change, and our collective and individual survival. And that's how necessary it is. I want to reference here, on a sad note, the death of Erica Garner, the 27-year-old daughter of the late Eric Garner. You recall Eric Garner was, in my view, murdered by members of the police department as he was placed in an illegal chokehold And the famous words, his last words were, "I can't breathe." He died on July 17th, 2014. Yes, that's him. July 17th, 2014. And immediately after his death, which was just outrageous, and to my mind, still a gross injustice, even though the family had settled with the police department in the city of New York, it remains a very telling lesson to us all that this system is well organized against us. But his daughter, Erica, took up the mantle of leadership. And she began to raise the question, along with Black Lives Matter and other groups, to raise the question about the constitutional rights of individuals who historically have been targeted by police. And she didn't have to do that. She could have just, retreated, and she could have borne her sorrow quietly. But that's not what she chose to do. That's not what she did. She took up the mantle, and she did an incredible job of advocating. It was not, and she knew it, it was not going to bring her father back at all. But she felt a need to stand in his name to advocate for others who summarily are being dispatched all over the country by various police departments. I don't think funeral arrangements have been announced just yet, but I wanted to say that this is a very telling situation. She died after suffering an asthma attack, which led to a heart attack, which led the doctors to place her into a coma, but she didn't make her way out of it. She leaves behind a child. She just had a child 4 months ago. So she had every reason to be absorbed in other things. As a new mother, as a woman with a future, she's in her late 20s, she still could have done so much with her life that people would say, well, that's a good thing that she's doing. She's proceeding to live a life. But she decided unselfishly that she was going to do the work of raising the consciousness, not just of the city of New York, but the nation and even the world. In that short span of time, she was able to do that. I mean, she didn't go to advocacy classes. She didn't take classes in the U.S. Constitution. She didn't seek advice from notable lawyers and so forth. She just knew intuitively what she had to do. And there's a great deal of respect that she should be accorded for doing just that. She was at a time in her life where, after a certain period of mourning, she could have gone on with her life and she could have hung out at the clubs. She could have had a great life, a fun. But that's not what she did. And the instruction that we could get from her is that when a thing matters, and it matters enough, you do what you have to do. You devote yourself in some way to make and create meaningful change. The reports said that it was during her pregnancy that she learned that she had a heart problem. And she could have quit. She could have just said, well, I just need to sit back a bit. But she didn't do that either. So it's an example to us. We do have examples all over the place of people who choose to create change, even at the cost of their own lives. They make the supreme sacrifice. And because she did what she did, we know that the entire nation and even the world, they're on the alert about the, quote, problem in the United States that still has not been resolved. We have more, according to the records, the most recent records, almost 1,100 people being shot and otherwise taken out of existence in the United States. The vast majority of them are people of color and mostly men. The vast majority of their killers are white and young and on the force from between 0 to 5 years. That's the danger point. Various police departments have come under the supervision of the Department of Justice. And as you know, I've been critical of it. These reports that keep getting generated, the report after report after report on what the police departments ought to do, but never seem to be able to do that. They continue to ignore the implications of the practices of police officers just taking people's lives, as if it's an unfixable problem. But I just wanted to recognize and thank and appreciate publicly Erica Garner, whose life after her father's death was exemplary in terms of advocating for a whole community, not just herself, not just for Black people, but for all people who are the victims of unjust police action. She she did in just a few years what many people for many, many years could not accomplish or didn't even care to try to accomplish anything. But she stood tall. Admittedly, it was for her father, in memory of her father. But we can see clearly that it was way beyond that. So we should keep her in our good thoughts today and thank her for the extraordinary contribution she made in making this issue central to our consciousness, our collective consciousness. That leads me to where we're going this year. And today's a kind of a broad overview of my thoughts on where we ought to be going, and that is to really get serious about our survival. I've been talking about this for quite some time. I don't dare presume that that means anything, but it is important that we really come to grips with where we are in the scheme of things, where we are with respect to a system of control and systems, plural, of control. And whether we have any interest at all in exerting some kind of influence over our lives, individually and collectively, or whether we will continue to just talk about things, just talk. The reason, I shouldn't have to explain that there should be a reason for us to get serious, is that the enormity of what is facing us provides very little room. We have very little wiggle room, and still we continue to deny, avoid, put off, pretend that things really aren't as serious as they really are. It's very serious out here, and it's going to get even more so. There's a long list of realignments that are occurring, and by that I mean the social and economic order, the political order, are being exceedingly dynamic right now, changing literally from day to day, hour to hour. We don't have control over the system. We don't. It would be crazy to pretend that we do. But we do have, and I don't see the system as being, the situation as being so dismal that there's no hope. We do have power. We do have the means to see to ourselves and our needs. But we have to take a moment, retreat from the madness, and think soberly about what it is we are facing and what weapons, if any, we have in our arsenal to combat it, because we have to survive. You know, people would think that this is just an expression, you know, well, we got to survive. Gloria Naylor says, you know, I will survive. That is fine. That is a great affirmation. We have to believe that we will survive. But how? And with what? We are purely, it seems to me, purely reactive. And we have been reactive for way too long. We have been waiting for the other sides to give us the signal as to what it is that we should be upset about. And then, predictably, we react. But the signals come from them, not from us. We are purely reactive. We have to go beyond being reactive. We have to be proactive. We've got to decide what our priorities are and how we are going to make sure that they come to fruition. It's hardball time. We don't have the luxury of giving this system any more elastic than it has. We should be very clear about what this system is and what it is doing. The grief it's causing, the universal anxieties that people are feeling, not just in the United States, but across the globe. Governments don't seem to care. The rich are obscenely rich, and they are delighted to rub it in our faces. They own the means of everything. They own the system. They tell the president what to do, and he does it gladly. He's a servant of the wealthy, even though in terms of wealth he may have some wealth. But as I've said before, in the world of wealth, Donald Trump is a pauper. Real wealth now, that used to be quiet, that used to be behind the scenes, that used to be undetectable in day-to-day operations of a country, have come forward. They're running things. And what does that mean for us? What does it mean for the rest of the world? We've seen how crazy things are going. And a whole nation, all members of Congress practically, in the House and in the Senate, refusing, absolutely refusing, to recognize that we're going to hell in a handbasket. The enormity of the situation makes us feel even tinier. What are we, how do we engage and fight this? What kind of weapons do we have to fight this? How do we even wrap our minds about the idea that we should be fighting this? We're entitled to fight this because the system has become, on a wholesale level, totally untenable, corrupt, and antithetical to our interests, our collective interests. When, for political reasons, a newly installed president thinks it's a great idea to saddle future generations with $1.5 trillion in debt additional to what we have now. It's done so that he can, he can just enjoy the glory of doing something. But look at what he's done. And look, more importantly, at what all those members of Congress who supported this craziness, they continue to function as if, it's politics. But the rest of us don't think of it as just politics. We think of it as being wrong. It's deadly, not just to ourselves, but to the nation. It makes no sense. And yet people are convincing us that, yes, it does. It makes great sense. It makes a great deal of sense to saddle the nation with this kind of debt. And we know the formula for repaying the debt. We've known this formula for a long time. You come down hard on the people who least can fight back. You take away the small benefits that they have. You go hard with your propaganda that the reason they're poor is because they prefer to be poor. They prefer to be lazy. In a country with all this available to you, why are there poor people? It must be because they are genetically suited to being poor. We are in a very, very bad way. And it's the kind of thing that leads to even worse things. You talk to people in any country that has been through prolonged periods of sacrifice by the poor, at the, you know, in order to service the needs of the rich. It's a never-ending story, and it never ends well. So what are we going to do this year? In order to secure our survival, which is our first duty, we must survive. What are the tools that we're going to use this year to survive? What are we going to do to secure the future of ensuing generations? Are we being cowardly? We're not stepping up to the plate. We're going along. We talk theoretically about our position, but there isn't sufficient evidence for anybody to feel comfortable with the idea that the disfranchised are truly upset. The evidence, quite the opposite, suggests that they're accommodating it. Yeah, we grumble. Yeah, we flare up. But essentially, we too have accepted defeat. We have accepted defeat, and we have accepted a system doing whatever it wishes to do to us, and we're not putting up a fight. So this year, can we at least admit to ourselves that, you know, we really have to change? We have to change our ways of operating individually, and we have to engage in opposition, because opposition is what justice demands. When a system has become so inhumane, so oblivious to common sense, so dedicated ruthlessly dedicated to the interests of one group of people at the expense of everybody else, where we have a leadership that quite literally is mad. They're crazy. And we don't have to wonder about it. We know it. We've seen the actions that tell us this is a mad, crazy mad administration. When the President of the United States could say things like, what we need is a little bit of global warming, ha ha ha, or we're thinking of just attacking North Korea a little bit, you know, just give him a punch in the nose. This is his military advisors having this kind of attitude. We'll just bloody his nose. And you wonder why people now are exhibiting on a mass level the symptoms of panic and fear and depression. They can't sleep. They're becoming unpredictably violent in their homes. They're killing their families in their homes. The preponderance of reports about mental illness. This is not something that we ever imagined, really. We know that, like in any society, you would have people who are on the fringes for all kinds of reasons. But we never would have thought that there was a kind of adjustment to it, as we're seeing now. We don't see a nation rising up and saying, we won't tolerate this crap. We are not going to have starvation in our country. We're not going to have people sleeping on the sidewalks. We're not going to have poverty at a rate we haven't seen since perhaps the Depression. But now it's not just individuals, it's families. All the signals are there that our society is being torn asunder. And it is time for people to just say, this is not supposed to happen, not here. It's not supposed to happen anywhere, but not here, too. We're having people making very odd decisions. All the indications are there. Supposedly, the RV industry, this is recreational vehicles, you know, the old Winnebagos, used to see lumbering along on the highways with a grandpa and a grandma in the front seat, heading towards someplace for the summer. And it was literally that. It was a vacation. The report from the industry is that the sale of RVs is up. And that would make people believe that life has become so much better in such a short time that people are once again taking to the road for an adventure. But then you think about that. And you say to yourself, well, that's an odd thing. And I would bet that there is a connection between the sale of RVs and the loss of homes and the inability of people who used to be able to afford a home. They no longer can. So they're living in RVs. I saw on YouTube the other day a guy who basically has his own program that caters to this community of people who live in their vans and in their RVs. He himself was living in his van, or has been living in his van, for 10 years. The subject of the program I saw was how to stay warm in your van. Now, I don't doubt that there may be people in the United States who consider living in a van a viable way of life. But I bet there is a reason for living in a van. I bet there is a reason that older people are packing it in. They cannot handle the cost of maintaining a private home. So what is being reported as an interesting quirk to me was one hell of a signal about what is happening in this country. You have a whole sector of people living a nomadic life because the so-called American dream of a home has eluded so many, millions of people. They're rapidly downsizing. They're anticipating things are going to be even worse than they are now. And they're trying to get ahead of it. So you see these little suggestions popping up all over the country about what is happening. Now, this is not theoretical stuff. This is what is happening. At the same time, the real estate community is enjoying a great deal of activity. You have people living in vans. And in a certain way, I kind of admired the program because this guy, I don't even remember his name or anything, I just glanced at it, but I was so intrigued by it, I watched the entire thing. He has taken it upon himself to inform people for their own survival. This is what you got to do to live safely in your van. This is how I cook in my van. It's not the life that anybody would have described as a good American life. And I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not passing remarks here. I'm saying it is beyond, I mean, he's making the best of a situation. All these people are. But even so, he has the guts enough to say, based on my, I could share my experience and hope that it would benefit people in who are living in similar conditions. Now, who would have thought about that? That there are tens or maybe hundreds of thousands of people. We don't see them because they live in camps, or they travel as far as they can down a road and then they pick a place and stay there for the night. But people are selling their homes and living this way because it is more economical. That's the title of his show, How to Live Cheap in Your Van. We should be very upset about these signals that we're getting that are confirming for us every day that this country is on a downslide. And we have more in common with each other than we think. We should step up to the plate. Because literally, our lives will depend on it. There's no safety. There's no way to evade the likely consequences, except if we come together and we can agree that this is not just, it is not right, it is not moral, is not even sensible. It makes no sense whatsoever that people should be living this way. And a whole system is organized now almost not government by the people for the people, but government despite the people, government to spite the people. Government isolated from and insulated against the people. That's where we are now. And I'm not saying this to start some kind of theoretical exercise. I'm saying that that's my definitive conclusion for myself. I don't need any discussion, further discussion about, is this truly happening? I am satisfied that it is. And now I'm saying people should start thinking, very seriously thinking, about what is their relationship to this power structure going to be, in as much as it controls so much of our daily lives. And if it were competent, if it were even-handed, if it were experienced, if it meant to do good by the people, I wouldn't have a problem. But that's not what I'm feeling. So think very seriously this year about matching your power, the power that you have, matching it up against a system that insists you're not supposed to have that power. Think about the survival, your survival individually, survival of your family, the survival of your community, and then figure out what is it in your arsenal? What do you have in your arsenal to fight back or to protect yourself? Because there is going to be an onslaught. I don't know that these political movements that have been springing up in different ways to fight different problems, whether there is an interest in coalescing, in coming together with a shared power, which of course is a preferred way of going up against a system. But we see here too, it's been disappointing. Great investment has been made by the people looking for an alternative that conforms with an ethical standard, concern for everybody, the protection of benefits. I'll give you one story. There's a friend of mine here in Florida who works two jobs, and if she gets a job on the weekend or so, somebody wants their house cleaned, that's what she will do. But generally, she has two jobs. Her main job hasn't been paying much. She took on a job as a server in a seafood restaurant. It's quite well known here. She doesn't get a paycheck. She doesn't get a salary. Her money comes strictly from tips. But from her tips, she has to give the busser, the person who clears the tables and so forth, he gets 10% of her tips. And she has to encourage, insofar as she can, the customers to drink alcoholic drinks, beer, maybe, wine, whatever. But she has to tip the bartender also from her tips. This is modern day America, folks. She has to pay rent. She has a grown son who has moved back home because he can't make it on his own. He and his girlfriend have a child who also live with her and the dog. Okay. So you could imagine on a day-to-day basis what kind of stress this is in her life. There's no way she could plan anything. You have to pay a car note. You know, you have to buy food. You have to pay your utilities and so forth. And this is her life now. She worked for a firm, but it went under. And this is her life right now. I'm telling you, nobody really that I know is exempt from the craziness that will continue to happen. It's a matter of whether there's enough of a cushion. We have enough of a cushion, psychological and financial cushion, to deal with it. For the most part, I don't think we have that luxury of having the psychological and financial cushion to deal with what's about to happen. I don't want anybody to reach to the point of despairing. Quite the opposite. I want to encourage people to understand they have power. And they should acknowledge the power that they have. But we should think very carefully this year about our survival and the survival of those to come. We should think very carefully about how we use our power. We should think of plotting our own course with the understanding that the system has already plotted its course. And at some point, it will come down on us in all kinds of ways, and we will have very little, if any, protection, real protection. Our only survival is in banding together, finding ways to communicate with each other, finding ways to build with each other. Our lives really, really do depend on it. These are the kinds of conversations that we'll be having quite often in this year, so that we can see a way out. It is not a very sympathetic system, and it seems now to be so vengeful that it delights in derailing as many people as possible. So I'm hoping that we don't despair, that we do take the time to calmly assess our situation and to work purposefully toward solutions. That is my sincere wish for this year. If we do just that, we'll be okay. But we shouldn't continue to deny the realities that we're living in. We do so at our peril. So that brings me to the end of our program today. I really wanted to impress upon you that we will have these kinds of ongoing discussions, measuring whether, you know, how we're coming along, each of us, in our individual and our collective program. It cannot be done haphazardly. It has to be a scientific thing. You have to sit down and think and come up with a system of your own. Stay tuned. Coming up next, what's coming up next? Infectious Myths with David Crow. We'll see each other tomorrow. And in the meantime, think about being purposeful in this year. Bye-bye. So I've got